bringing the stories of people just like us directly into your home and learning more about them. This is Trent Speaks. Yeah, sitting here hesitating because I really just don't know how to start this, which is what I tell all my guests, is that it's going to be awkward to start. And I've said this before recently, but I'll say it again. It's hard just to jump into an interview and start an interview when I know that it's not the start of the podcast, if that makes any sense. But I have my buddy Troy with me this week. Troy, welcome to the Trent Speaks podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. When I started talking to Troy about kind of like, what do you want to talk about? One of the big topics that Troy really wanted to talk about was leadership, and more specifically, leaders. So Troy, I'm going to turn it over to you because I know that this is a topic that you really wanted to touch on. And then as you keep talking and blah, 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 whatever I'm trying to say here, as you talk, we can kind of just kind of dovetail off of there and split in some different paths and everything. But I'll just let you take over because I know that you had a lot that you wanted to cover.
Yeah, no, and thank you for, again, bringing me on to join your other guests that you have for this. But the conversation, as I was really thinking about it when I first heard, I didn't have to talk about myself, which was thrilling, is leaders and how leaders kind of find themselves or find their way after leaving an organization with the height of the pandemic that we're all enjoying right now, and just also the parts of life that both of us are in, you know, since leaving school, leaving organizations, people leaving jobs, is leaders a lot of times identify themselves and their entire sense of being from their environment. So when you leave that environment, how do leaders find themselves? We both have some personal experience, but also I think there's some things to learn from each other on it, but it's just a really interesting question. You know, what is George Washington without his army? What is, you know, the leader of any band if he's standing in an empty room? It's an interesting kind of, I don't know if it's a Zen question, but one that just was tickling my brain as we were talking about doing this. So that's really what I want to go into a little bit, is it either finding your way without the leadership or just finding your new community, finding your new group and environment?
Well, what is it about this topic that really wanted you? Like, there must have been some sort of thing that clicked, because it didn't take you very long when I said, do you know what you want to talk about? And you didn't take you long to respond and say, yeah, here's what I want to talk about. What about this topic really drove you to say, this is what I want to share on the podcast?
Yeah, a lot of it was, based off of our own relationship. I don't know which thing we met in first, but about half the time we've ever hung out is some sort of leadership group. Back in college, it was, you know, some group, some organization, you're in charge, I'm in charge of the student leader program we were in. It was always something that for us has just been a big theme. But then even independently, so already that was a forethought, and it's just been on the top of the brain recently with the unfortunate situation of people, you know, losing jobs or just losing their normal environment. For myself, I'm fortunate enough to be able to work from home, but I'm working from home, and without roommates, a plant, or pets, it can sometimes be lonely here. And so it's something that we all are addressing in our own different ways, depending on how much emphasis you put on leadership in your own environment. But something personally affecting me, but I'm sure affecting a lot of, how do we define ourselves when the things we were defining ourselves by are no longer there? Maybe they're just paused, but they're just not there in the same way.
A great quote, and one could call it maybe a cliche quote, comes to mind of, I'm probably going to butcher this being on the spot here, but I believe it was Teddy Roosevelt who said, some leaders are born great and some have greatness thrust upon them. What is your take on that? Do you believe that people are born with that natural leadership ability, or is it something that is learned and there's experiences? And I guess the reason I thought about that quote is because as you were talking, I was thinking about, well, you had mentioned college. Is college a place that you really start to see your leadership develop, or is that something that you have always had personally and that was just a place that it grew stronger and everything? Or did leadership really not come into play for you until college. Does that make sense, what I'm asking?
Yeah, no, the question okay. does. You got a, okay. a few aspects I'll try.
Yeah, I sometimes do that. I just vomit everything.
No, it's like one of those good prompts that you read. It's like a paragraph. You're like, I can't wait to answer all of this. I just got to make sure I do. I think the last question answered first is that college was definitely where I found the most success with participation, organizations, leadership. It gave me the biggest period of growth that my career and life has had so far. But it was something that I had fostered early on. My parents, luckily for me, were involved and actually met in a volunteer ski organization. So I literally grew up surrounded by leaders and people responding to emergencies. And it was something someone has described as Kennedy-esque. You just grew up with all these people that you got to make a decision because at points it's literally life or death. Luckily, most of my life hasn't been that, but it's something that, it's just that the leadership to me, as I picture it, is anyone can be a leader. And depending on what situation or place they're in, everyone is a leader. Even the most quiet, introverted, I just want to go with the flow. That sometimes is the leadership to compromise, to find where the group succeeds rather than the individual. So I think rather than it being, you know, I think it was Shakespeare who said that line of thrust upon them or born great is everyone's kind of a seed. And there's thousands of different seeds, and I don't know that many trees, but from a palm tree to a willow tree to a great sequoia, people will grow to their different heights of leadership. And some of that is innate of, you know, if you took a Churchill, if you took a Kennedy to bring him up again, they're probably going to find leadership, whether it's at the slaughter factory or in politics. So it's definitely something that their potential is there. But if you take the wrong seed or the wrong environment, a palm tree isn't going to grow on an aspen alp. A pine tree isn't going to do well in sandy soil. So it's part of finding what kind of tree or height you can grow to, but also for me is finding that right environment. And I got really lucky with Marquette, Northern, people I met there, even just the greater state of Michigan, finding some connections downstate that really became my, you know, nesting pot, my place to grow for me. And, you know, finding other trees, other people to make the forest to butcher and just murder this analogy is sometimes part of it, is that, you know, growing alone is tough, but when you're growing with others and you're expanding your skills and you're building off of each other, it just goes a lot more. So I'm sure there's some part of the question I missed, but I think that really answers it, is that we all have the potential. It's about finding the right potential and the right place to put it.
I did look it up while you were talking. Because I thought about Night at the Museum, and I think that's where I thought Teddy Roosevelt actually said that. Here's what I have from a article from Montclair State University, so we can call this a credible source, I would say. In his work, Twelfth Night, and famous playwright Wordsmith and notorious plagiarist, William Shakespeare tells us not to fear greatness. And then here's the quote: some are born great, some achieve greatness, and some have greatness thrust upon them, end quote. The quote often misattributed to former Teddy Roosevelt. And then
there you go.
So yeah, there's that clarification. Because when you said Shakespeare, I was like, I have to look.
We'll call you both well-read and referring to who probably popularized it was Teddy Roosevelt, a very learned man who, if you're less familiar with Teddy's background, I mean, he was an asthmatic kid. He had many difficulties, and his doctor at the time, you know, back when they're like, here's some leeches, said, all right, here's a cigar and go climb that mountain. That was his prescription for asthma. So I think Teddy could definitely be attributed to that quote of, you know, he achieved greatness, but also at times, like on the hills down in Cuba, it was just thrust upon him with the Rough Riders. So I think he's a good person to, like Michael Scott quote of, what was it, Wayne Gretzky?
I was just thinking about that one, yeah.
You miss 100% of the shots you take. Wayne Gretzky, Michael Scott, Trent, it's all coming together.
I was just thinking about that one, actually. I guess, how do, you know, you mentioned this about leaders, like, and finding your way without leadership. How do you find your way without leadership?
So personally, and some of it's from my education background of in psychology, I very much prescribe to the theories from Vygotsky. He was a Soviet era psychologist, and one of his big fundamental principles is scaffolding. Basically, as human beings, from infants to old age, we learn from those around us, those above us, coming back to teach us. And I think that is especially true in many things, but most particularly leadership. When you walk into a new environment as the new hire, the new kid, the new whatever, you look to the leaders around you, those who are successful and that you follow after and you take as maybe mentors or advisors or just follow in their footsteps, but also sometimes those that you don't want to be about, the ones that you look at of, oh God, if I'm ever half of what that terrible person is, you don't want to be that. So I don't know if Vygotsky had anti-scaffolding as part of his theory. It's been a few years since I cracked one of those books, but I think that's really what we do when we find ourselves in a new environment is we look for the familiar. We look for what we recognize as leadership or what's being recognized as leadership. And I think our reaction to that speaks a lot of character, but also our potential. So whether you're landing in the prison yard and you're, you know, prison tough, and you got to punch the biggest guy there, like all the movies are terribly advised, or you're landing in a difficult situation where you just latch on to the best chance for hope you got.
So I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing to be looking at the familiar. Is that something that we should be looking for, or should we be looking for something more obscure or a mixture of both?
I definitely think the novel stimulus is always going to grow life. What's the cliche of life begins at the end of your comfort zone? Something to that effect of we don't grow if we don't reach. And to keep hitting that analogy of the tree is, you know, you got to go against some wind to grow up. And life sometimes thrusts that upon us with pandemics, firings, you know, a death in the family or a sudden move or something drastic. But you can't also just grow in an alien environment. If you dropped me or you into a country we don't speak the language, it's going to be a rough go of it. And I think there's something of that balance between is that the best parts of life are when you have that part in between, not too hot, not too cold, not too fast, not too slow. So having leadership and ideas that you can recognize, but also ones that challenge you, ones that push you to new limits, to new areas, to new ways of thought. It doesn't always have to be traditional leadership, but it could even just be, you know, you go out and you see an art exhibit that you've never considered before, or you go and you're just spending a day on the beach doing whatever passes the mood rather than a big structured schedule. Whatever's different for you can sometimes be that new stimulus that inspires that necessary growth.
Do you think there's, how do I want to word this?
It's going to be direct. If I know you for anything, it's going to be direct in the way you word it.
Well, I was going to ask about good leadership versus bad leadership. But it's not really the route that I wanted to go. All right, here we go. Let's just go down this unpopular opinion. Let's just follow the rabbit hole here. Hitler, was he a good leader or a bad leader? And I want to get your take because I have my thoughts on it, but I want to hear your take before I fully divulge why I'm asking that question.
Mm-hmm. I think he is definitely a lightning rod of so many conversations because it was such a watershed moment for humanity. Not just one civilization, but really all of them. And to put a honest, direct answer to it, I think he exhibited the great pieces of leadership. It was what he was leading towards, what he led people to do, and what his motivations, morals, and beliefs were that are absolutely terrible. But when you look at a man that, with others and with organizations, turned a battered country, a post-war area into something that threw off the shackles from the countries that beat them. You know, they rebuilt an air force when they weren't allowed to. They took over countries that then were given the rights to. They just bootstrapped an entire continent it was terrible things that he do. It almost makes me think of that Harry Potter Ollivander, where he was like, you know, great things, terrible, but great. Mm-hmm. And that weird doublespeak is yes, what was done is unequivocally terrible. But the leadership he exerted and those around him helped shore up and give that imagery of with, you know, early propaganda ministers, et cetera. He definitely exhibited like Stalin, Mao, Churchill, for FDR, exhibited great leadership. And that's why he keeps coming to mind, no matter how much you want to move past him, is because of just such a stark imprint on the societal conscious.
Yeah, I think that's a great parallel to make of bringing it to kind of how you just made that example about Voldemort and
yeah,
with Ollivander and everything. It's a great parallel because I agree. And that's, I'm glad that you gave the answer you did because I'm on the exact same page. Obviously, terrible things like the intention behind it, not good at whatsoever. But take away the bad things that he did in terms of characteristics and the way that he led people, a whole different story.
Yeah, it's like something that you could take people in an objective look. Look at an oil baron. Look at, you know, Mother Teresa.
Look at Lord Voldemort.
Lord Voldemort, look at a dictator. But if you take and you break it down to, okay, what were their goals? Did they inspire people? Did they complete their goals? Yes, yes, and yes. Their goals are extremely different, but as just leadership, I think, unfortunately, you have to answer yes, because it'd be dishonest to say they weren't. It would be dishonest to pretend that they didn't wave crowds over and they didn't inspire their followers, whether they're Death Eaters or other, to do things.
Can you recover from bad leadership?
Yes. And I think a huge part of that is humility and, you know, introspection and all those synonyms there. But there's actually a direct example of maybe not leadership, but of taking leadership after a bad action where somebody in the public eye recovered. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Chris Pratt, the guy from Parks and Rec. He really splashed big in Jurassic Park, the recent movies. And there was a ad that he did where they had subtitles running along the bottom. And at one point he just pushed them away like, no, we don't need that. Ha ha, made a joke. And just, he told the story, whatever it was. I think it was for Guardians of the Galaxy. And obviously it was a big problem for those that require subtitles, the hard of hearing, the American deaf, the, you know, people just learn a language. There's, you know, no, never punch down is a big role in comedy. I learned once. And less of what happened, less of reactions, but the way he personally reacted was a huge moment for me of he's taken it on the chin. He went out there and said, I did wrong. Here's why I did wrong. Here's how I'm going to improve. And I think he actually gave part of his apology using ASL. So he,
oh, wow,
he accepted it. He addressed it. And I think that's what we lack in a lot of leaders is, you could throw a pen in a library and you'll find a story of a leader, politician, an industry mongol who does something wrong and they don't apologize. They go the other way. They do the Jonestown flood and literally try and bury the evidence. But I think he showed a playbook of owning your mistakes and moving past them rather than ignoring them is a way for leaders to succeed past pitfalls. Washington, you know, the father of our country, led very terrible military campaigns at the beginning of his career. But it was by addressing and understanding them and growing from them that he was able to continue his career, which, yeah, good for him, but also lead down the path that brought us to today. So there's examples of plenty of leaders who've done a good job improving. The problem is that they're so often outweighed by those who just make the mistakes and keep trudging along.
And I think I asked the exact same wording of this question. Of course, we've been talking about so many different things. I don't remember if I asked this exact wording already about what makes a great leader. But here's where I want to go with that. Kind of, mm-hmm. Let's take that question and break off of that. because you had mentioned earlier, you know, there are those quiet leaders where people kind of just sit back and they can lead versus those people that you could look up at the room and in the group, you know exactly who the leader is. Talk to me about that difference, the quiet leaders versus what I would dub like the loud or apparent leaders. Because characteristics are going to be different in them, and of course they lead differently, and one isn't right over the other. But talk to me about your take on leadership as a whole and loud versus quiet.
Yeah, and I think it's an area that both the research and all the motivational speakers and all the movies too often ignore, is that the quiet leaders make such a difference for our world. Great leaders, loud leaders, like you said, they may lead a movement, they may make a sudden flash in the pan impact, but I think it's those quiet movers that have gotten society to where it is. There's one girl who that we've actually both know, and I'll leave her first name as S. But she's one that, as you were making that discussion there, is exactly who I think of. That if you were to ask it, if you were to ask a dozen people, is she the leader? Well, not traditionally, but when you see her with kids, you see her with adults, you see her at her job, or you see her just working with drunks that have wandered down the street, is that the humanity inside some of these people. And, you know, we can look to the COVID situation of nurses, of, you know, those that are working in healthcare, not at the forefront, not there at the surgeries, but they're just making masks. They're organizing their knitting group to make 1,000 masks. Those are the quiet leaders that save humanity. And those are the ones that are hard to recognize. They're the quiet leaders. It's really hard to notice silence. But I think that those quiet leaders, and maybe you have to repeat the question, but I think those quiet leaders are fundamentally to society more important because they leave a longer impact, while the loud leaders will, you know, cause a sudden shift and a change. And, you know, it might be great advances in a small age, but I think it's those quiet leaders, you know, the mothers, the fathers, the ones who are just slowly protecting, slowly guiding the group, slowly leading the little ones around. I think those are the ones that keep society moving, and they might be following the direction of a loud leader, but they're the ones who expand and continue that leadership.
You talked about potentially longer impacts from those quiet leaders. Quiet versus loud. Let's just kind of keep going off quiet versus works. Loud. Do they have different impacts overall, or is it not necessarily the type of leader that you are, but the type of situation or the type of movement or whatever it is that you're leading where the impact is going to vary?
It's a terrible answer, and I hate when others do it, but both. Like I said before, the sequoias and the palm tree seeds, is that it would be very difficult for either one of us, Trent, to be a quiet leader at all times. We are both speakers. We both enjoy, you know, putting our ideas out there. But I also know from both instances of your own and my own experiences that there's times where the quiet leadership is called for. So I think it's the right fit to the right environment. You know, it's like wearing a parka to the beach or wearing a swimsuit to the ski hill, is that it's about the right fit. No one leader will be right for all situations. But that's good, because there is no one situation. They're always different, always changing, always these facets that when you break them down to the minute detail, it becomes mind-boggling of how does anyone make any decision. And that's where people fall back on what they know. They fall back on who they know, the experiences they've had, and they make, hopefully, the best decision at that time. So I think the quiet leaders have more impacts. Again, jumps to mind, you know, nurses, teachers, stay-at-home parents, those ones that, you know, they're not big grand gestures of fighting a bear and, you know, climbing out of a burning airplane, but they're the leaders that keep things moving. So I'm not sure, again, if that still answers the question, but I do want to turn a little bit on you, though, for a second. You've given me much of your mic to talk about my ideas of leadership.
Yeah, that's the whole purpose of the podcast.
I know it is, but I want to hear from you for a second of, you know, who's some leaders that jump to mind for you? Because I think every person you talk to, when you say leaders, they have a small handful of, not necessarily their favorites, but those people that jump to mind that are big leaders in their mental catalog.
Oh, geez, you're putting me on the spot because yes. It's hilarious because I was just going to ask you the exact same question.
Perfect, because I've thought of my answer, so maybe we need to go tit for tat.
Okay, well, can you go first so I can at least brainstorm here for a minute?
Because I know one for me, even quoted him terribly if there's any recordings of it, a speech for back in high school, senior year for the VFW scholarship is John F. Kennedy. I went to his library and fell in love with his ideals all over again. But just as a young progressive for his time, an engaging leader, just seeking a better way for all people, but also so real and fault and full of cracks in humanity. John F. Kennedy is definitely in my pantheon of leaders of who I look to.
Could leader and mentor be synonymous?
They can. Who are you thinking?
Well, the reason I ask is because my friend Blake, who's a speaker, I met him at a keynote one time for a conference I attended as a participant. He was the keynote. And just his, I think maybe it's a little bit of both that I see in him is the leadership and the mentorship. But more so the leader aspect in terms of just helping me to, he is someone who's been inspiring for me to kind of look up to in terms of different ways to kind of enhance my speaking business and what it is that I'm wanting to do in terms of motivational speaking and getting out to people. And so really just looking up to him, I think both as a mentor and a leader within the business, in my opinion, just because he has been so successful. But he's been successful because he and I have somewhat-ish similar paths in a way. And so I think just being able to relate and hear what has worked for him, what hasn't worked for him, and really just kind of getting those lessons from him on the same note.
Yeah, no. And that's something that, I'm going to not pin a medal to your chest, but say is kind of the braver answer, is to go for someone in our personal lives. Trying to remember what reference it's from, but something of we speak the best of the living when they're no longer alive at their wakes and their funerals. And I think that's something hard. It's, you know, especially as tough dudes and, you know, tough society that we don't, you know, recognize real often enough. So that'll make me turn my next answer to Dave Bonzel, someone I think about at least once or twice a week, because of the leadership and the legacy he left at NMU. So definitely shout out if he's listening here, but, to everyone who knew him, he left an impact, and, being able to work with him in the student program in his final years there was, you know, just seeing that capstone, that, summary of someone's career, you're able to live a lifetime of their experience and you don't get everything from it, but I think he did a great job of bestowing on a lot of us the ways to lead, the ways to be a quiet leader and a loud leader when it's necessary, the ways to, you know, share what you've learned, but also push people past yourself. So, you know, I'm going to throw them right there up there. So we got John F. Kennedy and Dave Bonzel. That's a pretty tight group there. I think they'd win in a basketball game as well. They're both pretty athletic, so that helps. But those would be my two of top leaders.
I guess if I had to go one more, I just wrote down another one. Again, not one that most people would know, but my pastor from back home, in the Grand Rapids area, Pastor Tim, I'd say he's a big leader for me. He's someone that, again, I would say is both a leader and a mentor, but more so a leader, I think, in a few different ways. One, in the way I'm a very like Jeez Louise. I'm a very like faithful person. And so really just continuing to look up to him and the way that he does his messages and everything within his sermons and stuff. He makes it super relatable. And I think that he does a very good job at relating it to our everyday life and making sure that scripture and everything could be well understood. But he's definitely someone that I've looked up to, and even being out of that area and not going to that church necessarily, but still trying to stay in touch with him or listen to sermons online and follow him online and everything. Just because I think you do that when you're inspired by people, you try to keep up with them and follow them because you, you are inspired by their leadership. And so there's a reason that you're wanting to keep up with them in the first place.
Yeah, there's something about their personality or the way they express it that, you know, makes you want to emulate them or follow them or at least just take in what they're saying. So, you know, fun way for me, and I'm sure you've got more prompts that'll bring to more productive parts, but I like how that kind of circles back to the initial question here of leaders losing their environment and finding it somewhere new. So, like in that example with your pastor, is you still found a way to connect with them, even though you left the Grand Rapids area?
Yeah.
Yeah. So even though you left with the wonders of technology, you were able to keep in touch and, you know, still follow up and get some of that, which is probably a benefit for our age if we use it. If we, you know, reach out and write that letter, that email, drop that phone call, send a Facebook message. So I think that is something that maybe is the answer to the initial question here of, you know, when you lost, do we turn back to where we were from and, you know, keep those reminiscing memories, or do we find new? And I think we all know that it's a mixture somewhere between the two, but I kind of like the idea of that connecting with the initial thought, but I'm sure you've got some other probing questions from the mind of Trent.
Actually, I was going to ask you to make sure, was there anything about leadership that we didn't cover that you wanted to cover? Or that you wanted to make sure that you touched on today?
Oh, that's a good one. I really think an area of leadership, as I've experienced it, and I've taken it very informally, very formal sit down. You're all gathered around a table, dressed in your best high school outfit you can, to, you know, college, and then in my career and stuff like that. I think a big area of leadership is focus on the small moments. Is that sometimes we always think of leaders as Rambo, as the action star, as the person who you can't do that, and they, you know, overthrow the big bad guy. But it's really not. And maybe that goes back to what we uncovered of quiet and loud leaders. But I think it's something that as individuals who are looking to grow as leaders or recognize young leaders behind us. Ones that are coming up, either, you know, they might be physically older than you, but they're younger in the organization, or they're less experienced for whatever reason. But finding those growing leaders in the quiet moments and trying to recognize, you know, those golden moments when they're still happening, less when you look back, but just keeping an eye for them. Because I think those small moments, the quiet word that someone says is support when the person's having a bad day, the person who stays after and helps clean up or helps do a thing that they weren't directly asked to but needed to get done. Because I think those are the moments that we can most learn from. Those are the moments that we can most help someone else learn. But those are the moments where we can also, and too often fail, to identify those leaders and leadership opportunities. Something that struck me when I was watching a Netflix movie early this week was they kept telling the kids to clear the table. And it struck me as weird. And I realized it's a small moment because my parents, grandparents always put an emphasis on that. You clean the table when you're done. Someone made the meal, you clean it up, kids. It's part of the deal. So it struck out to me as weird because it was just a quiet leadership that was foundational to my family. But I think it's something that if you find more of those moments, we'd all be better for it. If you found that moment of help the older person across the street, hold open the door for someone when they've got their hands full. Do those small little things that just, it might not look like leadership in the moment, but you look back and it's somebody put others in, above themselves. And I think that's the biggest thing of what leaders do, is that they put others above themselves. They have sleepless nights. They make tough decisions, but they really are trying to do the best for the most people. Whether they're doing it for the wrong reasons, as we've discussed, Death Eaters and all, or they're doing it for the right reasons. I think that's really what a leader is not necessarily the one at the pulpit and the one at charge, but the person who's trying to put others above themselves.
Well, a couple of last questions here for you. Earlier you had mentioned about how leadership has really, you know, how college was really where you found your most success, but how leadership has really played into your career and your life. Can you elaborate on that? What would you say has been the most impactful experience?
In building my leadership or practicing my leadership?
Let's go with both. If you're going to ask, we'll go with both.
That's the fair way to pry that open. Well, I think a big way of practicing my leadership isn't the biggest moment, but in my career and in my field was huge. And as I found out more and more, completely unexpected and not unallowed, but just never been done. So in my career after college, one of the biggest areas I've worked in is with a tool company, and they've got a type of product that is big, heavy, and expensive and moves around, but it's also highly valuable, but highly technical. So when I was working as a sales rep for that, I kept asking questions, as I've been annoyingly known to do, and I get answers, and I'd have to ask the question again. And I finally asked, is there some central resource for this? Some, you know, go-to guide for all these questions I'm not the first to ask that people keep coming up again and again and again? And the resounding answer was no. I was like, okay, well, that happens. Sometimes there's a resource you need, you know, a phone book, but no one's written the phone book yet. So I took with some others that knew more than I did. I took with some others that had access to people who knew a lot more. And I took with the people who are in charge, and I asked, could we do this? And they said, sure. But who's going to do it? Who's going to lead it? Who's going to take that and put that on themselves? And stupid young me said, I will. And that was a moment that catapulted my career in my company. I presented a few months after I was hired into that position at our international conference for the entire world company, presented this cheat sheet, this guide that's now turned into, it's like 200 megabytes to download it for the company, because we can't even email it anymore because it's grown so necessarily large. But that was a moment of practicing leadership where if I hadn't had the experiences before telling me to go for it, showing me that, hey, you needed this, others probably do, I could have built it and just kept it myself and made my life easier and happy day, go off and have a beer. But it was something that was founded in me from others that when you can do good things, do them. When you can help others, help. When you can lend a hand, do it. And so that for me was maybe not the most showy, but something that to me just resounding echo since of practicing leadership was that highly technical, very niche, low impact on the world, but made a difference for me and made a difference for others.
Well, and as we wrap up our time here together, what would you say is the one thing that, whether it's something we've talked about in the last however long we've been talking or not, that you want to leave people with, that you want people to remember and to take away from this podcast today, Troy?
Yeah, for those listening, you know, wherever you're doing, whatever you're doing, is take a moment for those little moments. Whether it's yourself, that's sometimes the hardest thing to do, is to recognize great leadership in ourselves or great actions of ourselves, but especially those around you. Some of the biggest moments for me where I grew my leadership that led to my big moments is because somebody noticed. So notice. Say something of, you know, the thanks, or let it be a few minutes afterwards. Hey, you know, I appreciate you speaking up and defending me in there. Hey, I noticed you went off and did that extra project when no one asked you to. Hey, whatever the thing is that they, you know, organize the children's choir. But recognizing yourself and recognize those around you, those who are practicing good leadership, and work to incorporate it more in your daily life.
Troy, thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your thoughts and your perspective and your take on leadership with us.
Thanks, Trent. I appreciate the opportunity, and I really think we'll hopefully be able to look back on this and either have grown as leaders or both look at ourselves of, damn, we were young, wise whippersnappers. So I'm excited that we got the chance to do this, all things considered. Thank you, Trent.
Yeah, of course. And Troy, hopefully we can have you back on again sometime. But seeing as how it's time to do the sign-off, it is your turn to do the sign-off. Yeah, you get to do the sign-off. Yeah,
sign-off.
What you folks can't see is the blank look of expression on Troy's face right now. Yeah you get to sign us off.
Sign us off. Now, I've always wanted to like bring out a little keyboard and do a sign-off where like you make up your own jingle.
Well, do you have one?
No, not at all. Or musical talent. So with the lack of any talent and any familiarity there, I'll sign off with, I think, what one of the greats... there was a new speaker that I wanted to emulate. So I just will say, with a complete fluster of everything and a lack of any two brain cells to fire together, thank you all and have a great night.